honorable members. National Treasury.
Right.
We are back. To continue with our normal program. Sorry. Just let me behave. Set of documents before us, the financial market bill and the credit rating services bill. We have had a substantial engagement in our last meeting, particularly around the financial market bill. We will not be taking presentations today from National Treasury unless you've got something compelling that you want to clarify in terms of the first item. If not, I think honorable members will have to indicate in terms of the documentation circulated whether in terms of the financial markets is still issue that we need to iron out. I think Momo is supposed to be part of your delegation. Is it still arising?
Treasurer, he had a meeting this morning with the CEO, so he's a little bit late, but he is admitted now, he's on the way.
CEO?
Yeah, he had a meeting this morning and a follow-up meeting from the minister meeting with the CEOs last week.
Okay, honorable members, financial market bill, our business is basically to adopt consideration and adoption of the committee report on the financial market bill. Is there any other thing that we still need to entertain around this particular item? Honorable Ambassador.
Thank you, Senator. Forgive me, I am coming at late in process, so point of priority. Consideration and adoption of the committee report on the financial market bill. I was given to understand that the bill has not been voted on yet. So doesn't the bill first, if that's correct, doesn't the bill first need to be voted on and then you adopt the report as all other committees do?
I can't hear you. You say, isn't the bill supposed to?
I may be in error, so if so, please forgive me. But I'm given to understand that this committee has not voted on the bill as per yet, as required. So if that's the case, then you, before adopting a report on the bill which reflects the voting, the committee needs to deliberate formally on the bill.
Yeah, you sit through the chair, honorable members. What are you saying, honorable Tlamini?
I'm saying today I can exactly that.
Okay. Clarified? Any comments on the bill?
Chair, can I just confirm this version that we've got from government printed? Is this this amendment? No, it doesn't seem to be.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The version from the government printed is the table version of the bill as introduced in Parliament, and that is circulated because the A list that has been circulated speaks to that particular version of the bill. And the page numbers and the line numbers that are referred for each of the items in the A list of the bill where the amendments are proposed to be made, those refer to the tabled version of the bill. So that is why the tabled version of the bill is circulated, because the A bill has to speak to the tabled version of the bill that was introduced in Parliament. Thank you.
Are you satisfied? Another headache? Good. It would appear we concur. Honorable Nyama,
we want to move chair the adoption of this bill.
Any seconder?
Point of clarity. He said he wants to move the adoption of the bill. Mr. Chairman, may I? I have served in many committees, adopted many bills. I have never seen a procedure where one, when the bill is adopted as a whole. The procedures of the Parliament since 1910 is that the bill is voted on clause by clause. After a motion of disability, this is not a money bill.
Yeah.
In respect of the money bill, the committee had the tradition until the adoption of the Money Bill Amendment Act of just voting the bill up and down. But this is not a money bill, is it?
Now, you see, Honorable Ambrosin, correctly was said you are a latecomer in the process. So, being a latecomer in the process, the assumption should not be that the process that you are talking about has been followed.
Okay, that's what I asked before.
And thank you. Can you second the adoption? Okay. Yeah, no, we he has been clarified. There's no need for him to apologize. I think it has been seconded, honorable members. Okay. For record purpose, I'm going to read report of the Standing Committee on Finance on the Financial Markets Bill B12, 2012, National Assembly dated the 5th of September. The Standing Committee on Finance, having considered and examined Financial Market Bill, B12-2012, National Assembly Section 75, referred to it and classified by the JTM as a Section 75 bill, reports the bill with amendments. Agreed?
Agreed.
Thank you. Can we move to item number 2 of the credit rating? We have the bill, the proposed amendment to the credit rating bill document here. And now come
I'm not sure whether the National Treasury was still going through advising amendments, because the last we had National Treasury were advising us about amendments and referred to lines, and we didn't have lines. We needed the bill introduced. We now have the bill introduced, so I'm not sure whether there are any further amendments, or otherwise we just go clause by clause through and vote on every clause.
Yes, sir, we have circulated the original bill as tabled, and we have circulated the A version, and then for members' assistance we have circulated a version which combines the A version, so that is the version which is after the table. We do apologize again, last week there was an error in the B bill, which is the bill that we where we consolidated the proposed amendment. That was just due to some misunderstanding between certain of the board lawyers.
Okay. Welcome, Momo. We apologize that this type of thing happened. We shall continue to apologize every time you appear before the committee. Okay. Honorable members,
yeah?
As suggested and as it is the practice that we should go close by close, we have this proposed amendment on a separate document. And there are clauses that have not been amended at all in terms of the act or the bill before us. So I suggest that we, as you alluded to earlier on, that we take clause one, and if there's any disagreement on clause one, then let's deal with that, honorable members. Clause one. Honorable Harris.
Chair, I propose that we amend the definition of credit rating services. Because right now I think it's way too broad. If I may read it, it reads, credit rating services means data and information analysis, evaluation, approval, issuing, and review of credit ratings. I think we need to specify that the data and information analysis is in relation to a credit rating. Because I have many friends that work in financial services and their work is easily classified as data and information analysis. I think it's too broad and we should insert words in relation to credit ratings to clarify that that's what we're dealing with here.
Thank you. Can I ask the Honourable Tim to repeat exactly what he's saying?
Under definition?
Under definitions, under definition of credit rating services, we insert the word in relation to credit ratings next to data and information analysis. So we specify that the data and information analysis is in relation to credit ratings. My argument is that the data and information analysis part of that definition does not necessarily refer to credit ratings, and it needs to.
I'm writing here on the areas, like everyone would see. It says credit rating services means data and information analysis, comma, evaluation, approval, issuing, or review of credit ratings.
Yes.
So, what is the specific recommendation?
I'm satisfied that the evaluation, approval, issuing, review of credit ratings deals specifically with credit ratings, but I'm uncomfortable with the fact that data and information analysis in the formulation of the definition doesn't necessarily refer to credit ratings. So my suggestion would be we amend this to include the words in relation to credit ratings in between the words means and data.
Thank you. I think what the Honourable
on the same topic.
I think what the Honourable Harris is doing is pointing out to what is merely a linguistic difficulty. Because if you read it as it reads now, the evaluation of a credit rating is credit rating services. And obviously that's not meant. If you evaluate a credit rating, you're not issuing a credit rating. So what is trying to make sure that whatever it is only for purposes of doing a credit rating. So if you're evaluating, or you're approving, or you're dealing with information analysis relating to credit rating, it falls within the purpose of the act only if it is for the purpose of doing a credit rating itself. If it is for different purposes, analyzing it, applied, evaluating it, even assessing its impact on the conduct of your business, etc., and writing a report about it, that could not possibly fall within the scope of this act. So I think it's just tying up the language to avoid erroneous interpretation.
Thank you, Chair. I think I hear what honourable people, member are saying, but for the mere fact that it is the word services,
services include data, include information analysis, include evaluating that service, include approving that service. So I don't say anything with the definition.
If you read means data and information analysis, forget about the other, of credit ratings. You have to read of credit ratings with evaluation, with information analysis, with approval, issuing, or review.
Let me hear from the side of the carpenter. What is our response on this?
Yeah, I think the hearing is concerned. Maybe just after the word or the view, you put a comma. Okay? It should then be as clear as crystal water is the initial one, as clear as mud. That Uncle Alan says he's got friends in the financial sector. I hope he's not lobbying for them, but I think I'm sure you'd be happy for a comma after the review. I think that would deal with his concern, which is a fair concern.
No, I didn't wish to put it down.
Okay, let's start from last word said. It is a fair concern. So if we accept that this is common cause, that there is a fair concern, let's see how we address it. And if you resort to grammar, doesn't help. I mean, doesn't damage. You can put a comma before a gerund. So that doesn't, the comma there won't do it. What the honorable Kornoff was raised, the difficulty that I think arises out of this is that the data and information analysis of a credit rating, which you and I can perform for a client of ours, that cannot be a credit service. And I think we all agree with that. So we need to take those words and refer them back to the purpose. So it must be for the purpose of formulating a credit rating. So I would rather say in relation to a credit rating, I would say for the purpose of a credit rating. And it doesn't help use the definition, use the defined term to unpack the definition. So we can't use the word service to use what defines it. And I think that if we say for the purpose of a credit, for the purpose of formulation of a credit rating, then it should come together.
Van Rijn? We should move towards the concurrent.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. Indeed, we are prophetic. Now you can see the legal minds are doing the commas and the full stop, which we read here as a politician. So it doesn't really change the content of what this meant to be realized by this meeting. But I don't have to check with Commissioner for that. Because my understanding is that financial markets, of course, at times follow international standards. Is this definition, what's the origin of this definition? How do you craft them? Do you look into the international standard that is called in terms of defining what services, or we create our own South African definitions when we come to some of these definitions? I don't want to make it clear, because I'm of the impression that we need to follow international standards in terms of defining some of these.
Okay, generally we try and just follow what's in international terms, but having said that, it's always South African nuances. But we'd be happier, I think, if you said all the view comma for the purposes of credit ratings. I think that's what we put forward, and we don't have a problem with that. In English, there's no problem with that.
Honorable Harris, do you still want to, after the comment by National Treasury?
Chair, can I just confirm that the formulation would be comma for the purposes of credit ratings? I think that's fine, Chair. I mean, my problem was always that data and information analysis need to be qualified, and I think that does it.
Good. Agreed. We still have one.
Suresh before?
Sorry, just so that I could read out the final wording, if we can ensure. So it would read, credit rating services means data and information analysis for purposes of credit rating.
Means data and information analysis, evaluation, approval, issuing of review, for the purposes of credit rating.
No consumption.
Frank Chair, I was just going to propose that it would be for the purposes of, only for the purposes of credit rating, which doesn't completely fit. I think we should maybe say for the purposes of issuing, publishing, credit ratings.
Issuing or reviewing?
Well, yeah, there's a problem. We have to be.
You say for the purposes of?
I think we can leave it like it is.
Okay. Can you just raise it for record sake? For that we understand it better.
So the definition would read, credit rating services means data and information analysis, evaluation, approval, issuing or review, for the purposes of credit rating.
Thank you. The word of, the review of. It's the review of credit ratings, not for the purpose of. So that all must come in somewhere. So we're very close to each other. It's just a formulation.
We all comma should be review of comma for the purposes of credit rating.
Where does that of, can we just check, is it possible? It's just semantics now. We're very close.
No, that's correct.
Need comma.
Honorable Chawlala.
Thanks, but I'm not that I'm going to say something different, but I feel that, you know, how it was on its own purpose, it was correct, because when you check the credit information above, it speaks exactly to the credit rating. So we cannot assume that if you don't put for purposes of credit, therefore it nullifies what it's talking about. So definitely when it says that off credit rating, it deals with the issue that if for that purpose, we don't have to put away purpose itself. It is for the people, hence the credit of information speaks to them.
Some content. The same I thought they were very close to each other.
Maybe you put yourself as one. Let's leave it then. Let's leave it as it was, but at the end for the purpose of credit card. Let's leave it as it was.
Have you catch up that, Mr. Treasurer?
Okay.
Agreed. Okay. Any other... We still on post one? Honorable Harris?
Yeah, I've just been reading the legal opinion we got from Advocate Jenkins on the... definition of this act, and although the amendment has been narrowed somewhat, or rather the definition has been narrowed somewhat, I'm still uncomfortable with it. I still feel that this applies too broadly. I mean, if we simply look at the PFMA, the act includes just regulations and instructions. I am concerned that the advocate's potential for any challenge on any of these items that we've issued under the definition of this act would be a challenge to the constitutionality of the act. That was his, that was included in his opinion. And I think that the definition of this act is still too broad. And I would simply propose that we narrow it to include in line with the PFMA to regulations and instructions.
But perhaps before Ambrosini come on board, just be specific, Honorable Tim Harris, in terms of... What is the point that I'm speaking to?
So I'm suggesting we narrow the definition of this act.
In this act,
what? Yeah.
I did not get a clear response to the question that was posed by Honorable Van Rooyen in relation to the definitions as to whether they are narrowly focusing to South Africa or to the globe where South Africa belongs. Because if we say a particular meaning is broader, do we necessarily mean it is broader than we want in South Africa, or it is a broad nature of the definition which is globally defined? So if we say we need it to be narrow, what do we mean? Or if I can get that response to Honorable Van Rooyen, if this definition are only referred to South Africa or international venture.
So the National Treasury Momo did respond, but he was too soft. Can you just respond exactly to that?
Well, he did say it is within the context of the global environment, but also there and there will be a tweaking so that you can adjust to South African and adopt to the South African conditions.
I think, Chair, it's in line with the global approach in the sense that you want to give regulators a lot of quality powers. It's like in the financial markets where we talked about sometimes the rest include, let's say, Basel III. It becomes very quality. There are times when they have to make directives, and these are of general application. There will be those even of specific application. Now, we obviously have to deal with the constitutionality issues, but the big rationale for having regulators is to allow them to be able to make these directives. I don't know if I've answered the question. So, in terms of looking at powers of financial regulators, you do want them to have these powers. Are extraordinary powers we accept. To what extent that may be limited by the Constitution is an issue. But Jane, I don't know if you want to add from that perspective. So we would like to have it in if it's obviously within the framework of the Constitution.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. In relation to this particular question, both National Treasury and Advocate Jenkins, the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, did consider this question very carefully and had extensive engagements and discussions in relation to the appropriate ambit of such a definition. And while we do agree that it is somewhat wider than is included in relation to the PFNA, it's also relevant to note, I think, that in relation to certain pieces of legislation, the types of subordinate legislation and other actions that are taken in terms of that legislation that have that need to be given a significant degree of authority, legal authority, may vary in terms of different legislation. So in certain types of legislation, you will only be issuing regulations, and it's appropriate to only be referring to those regulations in when you're looking at what is the ambit of the overall legislative framework that is being established. But in terms of, in the financial sector in particular, and in other sectors, the nature of the regulation is somewhat more complex than what you would have in terms of a fairly simple regulatory structure in terms of the PFMA, for instance. So it is relevant to consider that there are other instruments besides simply regulation that need to be given, that may have the status essentially of subordinate legislation that need to be given appropriate recognition in terms of the authority, in terms of the legislation. So So it is, I think, appropriate to in certain instances, not in every piece of legislation perhaps, but in certain instances to recognize that there are other important instruments, and in the financial sector in particular, there are rules that are issued by the registrar that have a very substantial importance in establishing the overall regulatory framework for the legislation. And so then it's relevant to consider, I think, in each particular instance, how it is appropriate for that particular legislation to craft the definition. And I think we have looked at the issue carefully of whether it is permissible and in accordance with the Constitution to be crafting the definition as it had been crafted. And we would submit that the definition as it is appropriately reflects the nature of the subordinate legislation and other very important actions that have general important regulatory impacts in a sector, and that it is important and it is in line with the Constitution to be giving appropriate recognition to those in terms of the definition of this act and to giving them appropriate weight. It is notable that often certain instruments and actions of the regulator may not be given substantial weight because they're not seen to be given substantial recognition in terms of the legislation, and this is one means by which those actions, it is a clear signal and emphasis is given that these actions and these pieces of subordinate legislation must be given effect to and be taken seriously within the sector. So it also does play that purpose. And finally, it does also simplify things from a drafting point of view because you don't necessarily have to list every single different type of subordinate legislation and action that you want to refer to every single time. You can refer to this act and it incorporates appropriately all of the instruments and actions that you wish to encompass within the provisions that you want to be applied to. So it's important and very helpful from a drafting perspective also. I don't know if colleagues from the SSB may also, Roy, I think, has some input.
Sorry, Chair, just a very short input. The major change from the previous draft is obviously the introduction of the word, the words that have general application, which suggests that this is not, this aligns more closely with the PFMA wording. So the intention of those additional wording is the Constitution. The intention of that wording is that they apply to everybody, not that apply to specific instances. It's quite a major change in terms of the definition.
Chair, can I ask that we adopt this definition as is? The reason being that if it doesn't cause any harm, it's in line with other legislation.
No.
It is in line with the Constitution.
With
and we are saying that all the bills that we are processing, they need to be crystal clear. So what is wrong with the definition being wide and broad and because it gives us the specifications?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The point is very simple and it's been entirely missed. But before I make the point, let me do that against the backdrop of what the DG man said. He said that we are giving extraordinary powers, and Janine confirmed that. These are broad powers. So let's look at the definition. The definition includes this act, the one we are passing, the regulation, two, three, the rules, four, the notice, five, the directives, the approval I think we have taken out, five, the exceptions, six, the determinations, seven, the requirements, eight, the conditions, and nine, any other decision what may be. So, this would include. Now, the rule of drafting is that the definition needs to be able to be cut and pasted throughout the act. That's the basic rule. Wherever you see this act in the entire bill, this act means all these things. And if you go to that exercise, simply and plainly, it does not work. and I will give you just a couple of examples so I can take you through the entire thing. And that's where the problem is. If you look at the, starting from the first definition of this act, which is in 5A. Yeah, there is one in this act. Replace that with a determination requiring the termination and decisions of the register. It doesn't work. You cannot have the register be bound by the register. The register must be bound by something above. The same thing, if you do that, in fact it could work because information under this act, it could be, there we are protecting rights. It surely doesn't work in, for purpose of this act in 5B. It doesn't work in terms of 6. It doesn't surely work in terms of clause 2. Are the decisions of the register defining the object of this act? I mean, it's a subject to this act. This act applies to. So it's, and I could take you through each and every, I mean, look at duties, 7. A credit rating agency must comply with this act. On the register, the register must act in compliance with this act, which is basically in compliance with its own decisions. And I think that that's the point is. The point is it's too broad for the very meaning in which it's used. And it should refer only to the act and the regulations. And I really don't see anything to be gained by textually, by including all the others. I've heard what has been said, and frankly I don't find it responsive to their concern.
Yeah. Leanne, you'll follow, and then I'll take Roy. And I'm going to request that we are going to be a little bit systematic because we're just all over now. We need to just make your input, and then Roy, and then I'll have to find a way to bring everybody together as we move on. Otherwise, we're going to be all over, outside this committee room. Over to you,
Dad. I think it's a prison. That's correct, sir. So, President, I'm looking at this definition as it stands at the moment. Now, it's important to note that the emphasis here, Chairperson, is that all that is listed here in this definition of regulations, the rules, the notices, and directives, and exemptions, granted determination, the notice is that must be made in terms of this act. If you read the regulations, approve the regulations in terms of this act, and if you meet the rules in terms of this act, that would align to the rule of law, chair, and that everything that means that in terms of the law of the constitutional chair and in terms of the law. Now, chair, the other issue is that if you look at the other legislation, chair, this definition has been passed by the same parliament, chair, in the Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act 2002. Same provision for the same definition, chair, was passed by this parliament, chair. And chapter 10, the issue of taking this definition and applying it.
Sorry, chair, can I call for an order? While you are conducting the meeting, do you allow consultation because the team is having another meeting with the advocate?
Come on.
Then can take a break.
Well, if it for the purpose of that will make us to find each other quickly, I don't think there's any much difficulty in that. I think it's in the interest of the work that we are doing. Okay. Just continue. As long as Honorable Harris, it is also important for everybody to be on par in terms of what is being shared so that we don't move backwards and forward. But this is a consultation over a short period of time just to make sure that we find each other quick on definitions and other issues.
Sure, I appreciate that. I also won't disrupt the meeting.
Good.
continue? I think it's changed ever since. Even the previous bill chair that has been passed by Parliament, the financial market bill chair, there is such a definition. And so to go to the issue of this act, the bill that has just been adopted, the bill that has just been adopted, the financial market bill.
I'm just trying to find it.
The definition of clause 1.
What are you used for?
What is it?
Have made all the amendments in paragraph paragraph 11, we've omitted any other decision, and to substitute by, and then on page 5, after registrar, to insert they have general application. That goes to my earlier point, which is that the definition has been amended following engagement between our legal counsel and Advocate Jenkins. The check committee has the correct version. It says tailoring serviceable, the printed version. It says 4 September 2012 for meeting on 5 September 2012. It's been circulated now. What we've done is to assist the committee, because we've probably become very confused ourselves after last week, realized there's a bit of confusion between the A and the B. This is a document to assist the committee, which is basically what I would call the version that reflects all changes that have been made by the committee over the last few years.
Okay. If we then agreed on that definition in the financial markets, so why is there a problem now? Is it not being an administrative person, not being a financial markets person myself, is there a problem with the application with the definition of this act? We've used it in the Financial Markets Act as opposed to this act, because we did accept it there. That's the short question. Thank you.
Honorable Ambrosi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have, however you cut it, new bill, but old draft, new draft, you have 8 things, if I count them correctly. You have the distinguished colleagues.
The 8 things that derive.
You got the act, you got regulations, you got the rules, you got the notice, you got the directive, you got the exemptions, you got the determination mandate, the requirements, the conditions. Sorry, hopefully, sorry, there are 9. Now, you
they all derive their power or...
Yes, but they are... Yeah, allow me to make the point. But there is always a hierarchy in any source of law. And the hierarchy is established by the Act. By using this definition, you destroy the hierarchy. And you heard it when the distinguished colleague said, the regulation to this Act must be made in terms of the Act. Now, if you use that and you say the regulations must be made in terms of this act, and you take the word this act, and you substitute it with definition, which is the purpose of the definition, you reach the conclusion that the regulations must be made in terms of the notice, or the exceptions, or the conditions. And this is an unescapable legal, linguistic, semantic, grammatical problem. Done in other bills, doesn't matter, done in a state, in other statutes, may not matter, we're not here to repeat errors, this is an error. The second problem is that we don't know how the hierarchy works. We know that on top there is the statute. Nothing can contradict the statute. We assume that underneath there are the regulations. But is the notice in terms of the regulations or in terms of the rules? All the sources of law, these documents are bound to experience conflict. And by adding a definition of this act which does not contain any sort of rating, we compound the interpretative problem.
Honorable Lianga. Chairperson, the two gentlemen on my left here have clearly spelled out why this broad definition is being done. You can't have an order, you can't have a regulation which does not find any resonance in a particular act generally. And it will only remain scholarly for all of us to consider a very important aspect that says we cannot narrowly define terms within the financial markets outside of this act. You cannot have a regulation which cannot defined within
terms of an act, if it has got anything to do with financial affairs, it will be out of order. As a person, let us avoid having a deliberate attempt here to create stagnation in order to affect these processes here. When people have been listened to, they don't want to listen to others. They will continue to consult outside and not getting what the officials are saying here. Andre?
Okay, sir. Having listened to all the discussion, I think it will be appropriate for us to... I was not assuming that there was a legal opinion given by the advocate bank. Maybe after all the deliberation, it will be important for us also to get the insight of the thought on this one.
Okay.
That's a suggestion to me.
Okay.
Advocate.
Oh, yes, I do.
Can you share with us the ground, the common ground that you find with the Honorable Henry? And I gave you that latitude. I did so.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning. If I could just take the committee in very short through what happens with that definition. The initial definition, as it was a collection of all these things that were pointed out in the committee, but it included certain administrative findings that apply to an individual credit rating. Which, in my opinion, I indicate could be challenged constitutionally, because when we look at the Constitution, Section 101, it says that instruments of delegated legislation must be accessible to the public. So how do you make an administrative decision accessible to the public? Point one. And point two, legislation must apply generally. If we look at Section 36 of the Constitution, you say you can limit certain rights. In other words, in this instance, say trade. We're trying to regulate trade, that might be a limitation. That can only be done by law of general application. So therefore, we want regulations to apply generally. It might be a sector application, but it must apply generally. So therefore, I made that opinion. In my view, the concerns in the opinion has been addressed. Because although we have a broad, and I'll say something about that, now, still a broad scope for the definition of this act, if all those instruments must be applied generally, all of those instruments will be made accessible to the public and must be published one or another time. Some of them must be submitted to Parliament for scrutiny as well. So I am satisfied on that point. The issue of it's broad, it doesn't fit linguistically. Chairperson, I would like to, just my view on that is that when court looks at legislation, they look at a word and they try and understand what it means if there's dispute around whether someone complied or not complied. And if you don't have a definition in the Act, they will look at the dictionary. But by no means does that mean the court is going to take that whole dictionary of, say, three or four different kinds of means that a word has and put it into the Act. They look at what context will be. What is the purpose? What's the context of that meaning? And the same will happen here. All we're saying with this Act, when one will read, did you comply with this Act? The court will look and say, well, did you comply with any of those instruments, not all of them at once, any of those, the relevant ones, and in the context of the specific provision. So on that issue, I'm not concerned. The last point I want to make, Honourable Chair, is the issue of a hierarchy, which is a valid point, but I won't call it a concern. While I don't think it's a concern, when, and I use that as a measure in the opinion, the Public Finance Management Act. The Public Finance Management Act allows for regulations for regulations to be delegated legislation. But what the Treasury does, it issues circulars, it issues notes. And when it comes to complying with the PFMA regulatory framework, the Auditor General looks at those notes of the circulars and makes a finding whether it was compliant. Now what has happened in practice there, as far as I understand it, is that people are saying, well, this is not a legislative requirement because your definition of your regulation doesn't go far enough. And that's been addressed in this issue, in this Act. So what I think the impact of this wider definition is that we are doing away with some of the hierarchy. The hierarchy specifically between what the minister does with regulations and what the registrar will do with exemptions and conditions so on that's been prescribed, and treat them more or less similarly. But my understanding is that is where we're moving towards the Twin Peaks issue, to have those two regulatory points. So I don't see that as a legal problem or a constitutional problem to start fudging those areas of hierarchy. I am quite satisfied that definition is workable for the purpose of this specific piece of legislation. Thank you, sir.
Can we move?
Yeah, we want to move.
Yes.
I think we've been employed to run for quite some time. And after this explanation, I think, honorable members, there is a sense that we could have comfort in terms of the definition where it is crafted. Obviously, nothing can be exhaustive. The law continues to develop and evolve over a period of time. So can we move on?
Yeah.
Any other
concerns? Just one question, Chairperson. Yeah. Why do we put in registered credit rating agency definition? If you look at the definition of a credit rating agency, or external credit rating agency, or registered, it's not already there. And it should be registered in terms of this act. Now, are you not saying it again?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. When we were reviewing the bill in light of the submissions that were made to the committee in the public submissions process, and when we were looking at the bill generally to make sure that it was as thoroughly refined as possible, it was identified that in relation to Clause 5 of the bill that provides in the original table version of the bill, we had referred to registration of credit rating agencies and approval of external credit rating agencies. And when we looked at the bill, in light of the consultation process and the public hearing, we realized that was a rather cumbersome distinction and that we wanted to provide a quite consistent approach and provide for both registration for not only the local credit rating agencies, but that external credit rating agencies, instead of applying for approval, would also apply. It would still be also called registration, and there would be very fairly consistent and very similar criteria that would be applicable in relation to both types of entities. So in order to provide or to ensure that consistency in approach was clearly set out in the bill, then we recognized that we couldn't just refer to credit rating agency. It was appropriate to develop the term of registered credit rating agency, which incorporates both the domestic credit rating agency and the external credit rating agency, and makes it clear that there's a linkage with Clause 5, that then all the processes in Clause 5 would be applicable to registration of both types of entities, and also then the requirements in the Act would generally be applicable as well. Pat Roy has some additional points.
The Chairperson before he's doing that, unfortunately it was not indicated in the amendments that they're changing the definition of a credit rating agency. If I read the table bill, it says clearly a credit rating agency means a person incorporated under the Companies Act and who is registered to provide credit rating agency in terms of this act. But in your new version, you clearly say now a credit rating agency means a person who provides credit rating services. So you've omitted that last part. Then that is why it's making sense to put this in. But you haven't spelled it out to us that you are amending that definition.
To me, comments. It's quite great. What we've done is we explained this thing in quite a lot of detail in the response document that was submitted at the previous two sessions ago. It just helps us streamline certain issues in the bill. It doesn't make much of a difference in terms of the definition. So you'll see the word registered now appears if you look through the proposed amendment. The word registered is just included because we want to make sure that we define this concept of registered credit rating agency as being the concept that is the concept throughout the bill. Just for clarity purposes.
Have we got enough?
No. If they pointed it out to us that they've changed it, there was no question for me.
Yeah. I think it would be helpful, more in your team, that if we move from clause to clause, mm-hmm. where you've effected those kind of changes that are in line with the bigger discussion, how front you should actually spell it out so that you don't get into unnecessary gymnastics, in terms of language and not be very certain whether I think certain things are elsewhere. Okay. Agreed?
Yeah. Point of order. There was an amendment from the Honorable Harris. I seconded it.
What amendment was that?
The one that all this discussion started on the basis of his intention of amending the definition of this act. I seconded. So the amendment is before the committee. If we are in the formal stage of deliberation, so I suggest that as a matter of procedure, you need to dispose of that amendment before the clause can be amended. It can be approved. Amendments are deliberated and voted before the approval of the clause.
Thanks, Professor. I think after the advocate technically provided information around administrative issues, around the issues of the Act and the Constitution, it clearly said that he does not have a room comfortable with that. And I thought that we're moving from that premise thereof. And the issue of the hierarchy has nothing to do with what we're dealing with now. He does say it's a matter of concern that probably for the hierarchy. But when we deal with the legislation, point of reference is the constitution. And even not in the source of that, I don't understand why we're using up and down. Because the submission of Honorable Tim was such that we had to add PFMMA in the definition there. So I don't see that being a problem. I'm saying that, like I said, I'm going back to say what we are dealing with incorrect with it from Mr. Terence.
Tim?
Okay.
The problem is, I remain unconvinced and my proposal still stands for three quite simple reasons. The one is that I have concerns about the publication of these additional items listed under this Act. And as the Canadian says, if they're not published, then they don't comply with Section 103 of the Constitution. They're not publicly available. And it seems to me that we risk imperiling the entire Act on the basis of one of these things simply not being made publicly available. Secondly, I have doubts about the general application of things like conditions imposed by the registrar. And simply bolting on the words general application at the end, I don't think mitigates my concern. So therefore, I haven't been convinced that amending all of these items makes sense, and it's simply not just emulating the PFMA in terms of referring to any regulations and instructions would suffice. I haven't been convinced about the downside of narrowing the definition to regulations and instructions. So I'm afraid my proposal still remains.
You see, if we talk about the general application of the law of this bill, an act of parliament, it is important that honorable members should actually envisage that there might be difficulties in terms of the practical implementation into the future. But we should not also preempt. For that which is provided in the law, whoever governed by that particular piece of act or legislation would try by all means to follow the steps that are prescribed in terms of that particular law or that particular act. And I therefore want to say and persuade the honorable members that the explanation that the advocate Denkin has actually alluded to does give us a certain level of comfort. And I did say that we can't legislate everything. Rules and regulations are there to advise and to make sure that it is practical for the law to be implemented as we move on. And therefore it will be important that we should accept that the work that has been done, the explanations and the interpretation that we have received here today, both from the side of National Treasury and our own debt loan advisor, should assist this committee to accept the definition as it stands. I'm proceeding.
Chairman, I just wish to place on record that I am not satisfied by the opinion rendered here, and so much so after having heard your take on it and the Honourable Shabanala's take, which doesn't seem to be flowing from what has been said. The additional concern is in what has been said by Hansker Jenkins, there is a reservation on law in the Constitution. Trade can only be restrained by virtue of the law of general application. And here we are making part of the law of general application decisions, notices, conditions. You can't play with the Constitution in those terms. A law is a law, and a notice, a condition, an extension, and some of the things that we're making. And by rendering an opinion that the Constitution can be limited by virtue of that which is included in the definition of this act, I think we are moving on a terrain which is bad for this bill and bad for as a precedent. And when there is in doubt we should fall on the side of protecting the Constitution rather than undermining the guarantees that out in the Constitution, which is what would happen if the reservation of law of the Constitution were to begin to include any administrative action, as Advocate Jenkins is suggesting, to my great shock and horror.
Honorable Mazamini.
Thank you, Chair. Can I go on and but taking into consideration the concerns or the dissatisfaction by Honorable Ambrosini and understand the Honorable Tim, and then we move on and we note their dissatisfaction? Thank you.
I thought we were doing that, but it's important to allow them to their views. Honorable Steve?
Yes, we spent a lot of time on this issue, but it is a critical part because this is about the application of the Act and what the Act implies. And I must say, I haven't heard read a formulation like this before. Normally one would refer only to regulation. So I would like to hear from National Treasury why there is a need to add notices, directives. Is there specific? Because they are basically empowered by the Act. The empowerment lies with the Act and the regulations. Those notices flow from that. But is there a specific need to insert it? Because now you are facing the legal dilemma that has been pointed out by my colleague. I would like a persuasion from a financial market perspective. What is the need for that? Bearing in mind the danger, because where we're heading now is a vote on this particular issue. And I'm having difficulty because I appreciate the arguments from both sides. Thank you.
I'm comfortable with that definition in the financial markets, but I think in the credit ratings bill, maybe you're taking it too far. And just to add to that, can you convince us that this bill will be a slightly worse bill without that? The credit rate. I'm just talking about the credit rate. I don't think you need it in there, but why do you really want it? And if you got in here, will you try to get it into every piece of legislation you put in front of us?
The question,
yeah.
Can we read whether it is implied or these other things, or we need to spell them out?
I think the way Honorable Schwartz and Kornock have put it, I think that these are important questions. I think just to deal with what Honorable Schwartz has first asked, I think there is a philosophical issue here, firstly. I mean, the reason we have a financial sector which is like a nuclear facility. If you wait for the normal processes, wait for the act, delays, etc., you could have a situation where you have the kind of fallout that you've had. That there's a lot of benefits from the energy you get from a nuclear facility, but if you don't make sure that everything's right, there's no bolt there, it's accidentally dropped, you can ask for disaster. So certainly you have regulators so that they can act with speed. They do have to put things with general application. They do need to be, their regulations or their directives have to be seen to have equal force as what the minister would regulate. Of course you hope that they act in good faith and that they don't, and they need to be accountable. We care about those, and those are questions as we move to good things that we're looking at. I think that for all those reasons, we are
kind of pushing to give them quite draconian powers. And we've not been apologetic about it. We say, here's a nuclear facility. You do need to have regulators with teeth and regulators who can act with speed. I think that if we differ on that philosophy, and there will be lots of people who may lobby members and everybody else not to go ahead and point out the draconian, etc., we need to just take that with some perspective. I mean, we go to these international meetings. The language has become very draconian internationally with the financial sector. It's a fair debate whether we will still have a more effective system, it will be more costly. We must still do all of that. So that's the general approach we take. I think it's a fair question to ask that it's certainly needed for a lot of the financial bill. To what extent it's needed for the credit rating bill, I think is a fair point, and I'll just ask Janine to come in. Because we have seen this as a general approach, and yes, perhaps we may be going too far, but that's become the problem. Are we trying to deal with known unknowns or unknown unknowns? In the financial sector, we've seen there's been lots of unknown unknowns that we've had to try and deal with. So I think those are fair points. I think the objections are from a legal perspective. I thought Advocate Chang's view has kind of dealt the issues. We certainly, many of us have been in, you know, court for this constitution, don't want to go and lay bad precedents that kind of leads to all kinds of perverse outcomes in other legislation. So I think that we certainly do this with a great deal of thought, that if you want a financial sector, there is a case we could argue that the regulators and the power of their directors, conditions of general applicability, need to have quite strong status. I talked last week that we look at Basel 3 or 2. It's like this. It's really technical. You do want the regulators to be able to almost have the power of having some sort of original legislative powers when they act. And I think that if we differ on that philosophically, then obviously we're not going to come to an agreement on the legal issues. To the extent that we agree philosophically, there's still then the issue of does it meet the constitutional test. And I think, I'm not a lawyer, Janine can comment on that, and as Jenkins have commented, I think we will be guided by them, and I think we're comfortable from what we've heard that it is within that framework. We've therefore made the adjustments that we have from the previous hearing. I don't know if Jenny, you want to deal with the general issue.
Maybe before Jenny comes in, I just wanted to check with Honorable Korenhoff whether this information does take us there.
Chairperson, yes, but I would like, I think she can address the point whether it is really necessary in the credit ratings bill to have that definition. But on the financial, I agree, it's a little bit of a gamble. It is philosophical, it is a trend in the world. I'm prepared to support that, but not at all, in all goals necessarily at this time.
Actually, I think in respect of the importance in relation to this particular bill, I think our colleague from the FSB, Rita, might be able to have some inputs in that regard. But first, in responding to a concern raised by Honorable Harris about the publication and accessibility of certain of these instruments. In light of the deliberations that have taken place in relation to the bill and the engagements that we have had with Advocate Jenkins, we have inserted in the amendments that are included in the A-list to the bill. We have provided in respect of exemptions and directives and rules that would be issued in terms of the act that there would be publication requirements. And also, especially in relation to the rules, there would also be comments provided for and tailoring in Parliament of draft rules and also the final rules. In respect of exemptions and directives that would be issued, we have also provided that those, if they are issued by the registrar, those would also be tabled in Parliament so that Parliament would have appropriate oversight over those powers that would be exercised. So we have taken cognizance of the importance of the powers that would be granted in terms of that in connection with including the reference in the definition of this act, as we have strengthened those requirements for accessibility and publication in terms of amendments that we are proposing in the A list of the bill today. Thank you.
Okay, agreed. FSB?
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Chairperson. I think with this bill, as with the Financial Advisor and Intermediary Services Act, which contains a similar, well, actually the much broader definition, and the Financial Markets Bill, our purpose with the inclusion of this definition was purely to make the, to simplify the interpretation of the Act. So where, for example, you want to refer a contravention to the Enforcement Committee, it will include a contravention of a directive that has general application. And where the registrar, for example, has to issue a notice and have in mind the object of the Act, it will also be that exemptions that have general application. With other words, it's our purpose was merely to simplify the interpretation of each and every clause that refers to this Act. With respect, I have difficulty in seeing the distinction between the financial advisory services industry, the financial markets industry, which includes the exchange and so forth, and the credit rating industry, why we should have different definitions for these industries. And I think also the distinction between the financial, the public finance act is that it, you only have regulations issued in terms of that act, whereas we have all the different subordinate measures which the registrar can issue. I don't know whether that addressed the issue, but it was merely to simplify the interpretation and the implementation of the Act.
Okay, honourable members. I think we should agree that we have deliberated on the point and the definition has, is there in the bill and reflected in the A bill itself that has been provided here should stand the definition that has been provided for in terms of this act. I think we've done everything, honourable member.
Point of order. If this is a formal deliberation, we must vote on the proposal of the Honourable Harris, which is on the table. If this is not the formal stage of deliberation, we need to be informed accordingly. The proposal is on the table. I did not hear him withdrawing it.
What I say, Honourable Abosin, is that we have had the reservations and concerns, and that's what we need to record. But as a committee, we should actually accept the definition as it is proposed in terms of the Act and the ABL version. So we note and record the concerns raised by Honourable Harris. And I don't think Honourable Ambrosi, you should anoint yourself as a spokesperson of Honourable Harris. He's here to, for himself.
It's a point of procedure. You must put that to the House, to the committee. Before the committee is entitled to know how the Honourable Schwartz is going to vote, how the Honourable Kornhoff is going to vote, and how everyone else is going to vote. This is not a school. This is not an outside meeting. It's a meeting of Parliament. We are required to vote when there is no consensus. And I request you formally to put this to the House, to the committee.
No, I have said we have voted.
We are not voting.
We don't vote in
this committee. We don't vote in this committee. This is a total procedure of Parliament. If you decide that this committee will not vote, please say for all record because I will take it up with the speaker.
Okay. I have a bill of order happening here. And I think the behavior of the honorable member is really not acceptable, and it's not for the first time. It is unfortunate, person, that this honourable member continue to deliberately absent himself from the deliberation of this committee. And when he arrives, there is completely no order. There is no unity in this committee.
Honourable,
you are not going to behave and conduct yourself in a parliamentary manner, as a member of this committee, and I'm sitting here and I'm chairing. If you want to say something, say through the chair. You're not going to be allowed to interject and howl at members here. Okay? So, Professor, I also want this matter to be addressed by this committee, even if it is later, because there is a continual undermining of the chairperson by this honorable member. With due respect, honorable chair. Thank you. Madam?
Thank you, honorable chair. Honorable chair, I share the same sentiments which has been raised by Dr. Liege, that you know, we always come here responsible, accountable committee members from all the parties, and the honorable member doesn't attend not even one meeting, and the only time he comes, he will come here and he will disrupt the meeting and there will be no cohesion within the meeting. Secondly, you have made the ruling which you said. You have acknowledged, so if you go to records, you have acknowledged the concerns for both members. You have not yet called for the division. I don't know why Honorable Ambrosini must raise his voice, which I don't think is parliamentary, to the chair, whether he is impressing the media, because the media is here with him. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Mteto, you will follow Honorable Eric.
Chair, listening is a skill itself. If you want other people to listen to you, you must also listen to them. Secondly, you want to put it on record that the honorable member must be given this document and the previous document, and he must sit now, because we are delivered. We are on the final version of this thing. We cannot be taken back. And it must be noted that it is his first meeting. He cannot always come at a conclusion part of everything. We want also to check his data. Why the honorable member only come when we are about to adopt a bill and want to take us back to all documents? I wonder if he is also given all these documents, because I think their first part is to read first. And he must be taken through to the last document. At where we are. We can't deliberate on one issue for more than 2 hours. It's new to this committee.
Okay, honorable member. First, before Eric comes in, the issue that Honorable Yenge has raised, say the committee would have to find time to address the conduct and the behavior of Honorable Ambrosini, I think is on record. The term and period time will actually find time as a committee to deal with that. Honorable Harris, can we address ourselves to the amendments?
Yes, Chair. I think the issue that's before the committee, the proposal before the committee, is my proposal that we amend the definition of this Act. I mean, your suggestion was that the committee agrees we continue with the existing position. That's fine, but it's not before the committee. I made a proposal that we do narrow the definition of this Act, and I think that's what we're considering. I still stand behind the proposal, and I think the committee needs to take a decision on.
There it is, Andre and colleagues. Congress Van Royen. Honorable Van Royen.
Thank you, Chair. After listening to the advice that came from the state advice as well as Mr. Kennedy, I'm extremely comfortable with the decision that is currently in the list, and I'm not comfortable with the proposed definition by another.
Any other input?
Mr. Chairman, a discussion has been held here about me.
No, we're dealing with the amendment.
On account of my request for a vote on this amendment, I will not address the discussion, which is incorrect, because I've been here at the beginning of the deliberation of this meeting, on this bill, made my points there, and I'm coming now on the voting stage. I insist that the rules of Parliament be respected, and that this committee, like any other committees in this Parliament, vote on a question before it.
Honorable Yenge, I'd like to close. Yeah, I supported the view as presented by Honorable Jess Van Royen to make use and adopt the version that has been presented by Treasury around this matter, to say the definition is quite correct,
And this issue of the Honourable Member really just, I think, it needs to be addressed. Otherwise, we cannot. We are not new in this committee. He cannot always come and behave as if he is educating us. It is not right.
Yeah. I think, Honourable Member, we have generally accepted the definition as it stands. What we have at the committee is not an objection per se, but a view from Mr. Honourable Harris to say he should be limited, the definition is too broad. But the general consensus in the committee on this particular matter. I haven't had any other voice except Honourable Tim Harris and Honourable Amrosini on this matter.
Can I just, you know, put mine on the record? I have clearly said I don't think we need this definition for the specific book. I'm happy with it in the financial markets, or I'm happy to gamble with it there. But really to put it in this bill and to put the whole bill in jeopardy because of trying to get a trend of this definition into future bills, I cannot agree with that approach to start with this bill. I'm happy to defend it with regard to the first one, but I'm not happy to defend it with regard to this bill and probably future bills.
Chair, well, my view is similar. I also don't think it's necessary for this bill. And that's also just for the record purposes. I think it does go too broadly. But obviously, one, and I do support the financial markets aspect. But I'm concerned from a legal perspective, but I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, he now sitting with two dissatisfactions. The first one is that the definition is wide and broad. And the second one, now that we are hearing from the other two honourable members, is that it's not supposed to be within this bill. I just want to make it to go on record.